I want us to look together tonight at that passage in Judges chapter 16. So if you'd like to open it up, we'll look at different parts of the passage as we go. But if we took as a text, perhaps, verse 22. But the hair of his head began to grow again. Now, lest you think I've gone totally mental, bear with me. There is more to it than that. The hair of his head began to grow again. That's a really important turning point in the story of Samson in the book of Judges. It's a passage, a verse that has become very precious to me, not just because I'm bald myself, but there's great comfort here as you see how the Lord deals with Samson. The hair of his head began to grow again. Now, Samson's one of those really frustrating characters, isn't he? He's the kind of person, if you knew him, you'd think he's got so much potential, and yet it can go either way. And he's just a brilliant mess of a man, isn't he? His life is so chaotic, and yet all these great things seem to happen in his life as well. He's a glorious ruin, is Samson. So we're looking at his life. Really, it's the life of a Christian, I suppose, isn't it? A glorious ruin. Someone who's made in the image of God, even restored from their previous ruin, and yet who maintains this degree of mess in their lives. That's who this Samson is. Samson's life is a real life. It's a messy life. He's a glorious ruin. You see some buildings, don't you? Old buildings that have fallen into disrepair, and there's ivy growing up through them, and all the windows are smashed through. And at the same time, you look at them, and at the same time, you think that is beautiful and absolutely tragic. You look at it, and you think that is such a mess. But I bet it was something quite incredible once. A glorious ruin. Magnificent once. Something glorious about it. And yet, clearly, at the same time, it's in a bit of a state. Well, that's what Samson's life is like. That, very often, is what the Christian life is like, isn't it? There's glory there. And yet, there's still some mess that needs sorting out. Well, that's what the story of Samson really could be summarized as. Glorious mess. Brilliant mess. Samson looks a lot like that. In fact, the life of all the people in the days of the judges would have looked something like that. They would have shown something of dignity. Times were bad, but they would have retained something of the image of God. And yet, things still clearly in a mess for them. Really, it's a description of the lives of all people that have ever lived, isn't it? We're all like that. We live in dark days, and we need the Lord to bring us out of these dark days. And in the middle of it, we're in a mess. We're in a mess. We need the Lord to lift us up out of the darkness, out of the mess. And so we cry out, don't we? Lord, lift us out of here. Bring us out of this darkness. And the question that we're really asking, we thought about this morning, the question we're really asking in the book of Judges is will he do it? We all want to be lifted out of this chaos. But will the Lord do it when we cry out to him? Will he achieve his purposes? Will God bring us through this darkness and into his glorious light? Will he raise up a deliverer as he said he would? And with him, will he raise up all of his people, even though we're in a mess? Will that happen? Will we shine, even though we're so dim and dull now? In many sort of mythologies around the world through history, there's been this sort of longing. You can watch different films and stuff, and you'll see this sort of pattern coming through, an eagerness for something to rise up out of the mess and conquer. There's stories, aren't there, in ancient mythology about these bright, fiery, glorious creatures, things like the phoenix, bright and fiery, glorious, impressive, and yet it finds its origins in the ashes. It's raised up from the dust to become that sort of thing. Heroic figures lifted up out of nowhere. And the question we're asking really is this. Will God lift us up out of the ashes? Is God done with his church? Is God done with you? Is he fed up of you? Are you in such a mess that God is done with you? Or will he from the ashes lift us up and put us right? Well, we're going to look at this tragic end to the life of Samson here. And we're going to see how the living God deals with his people whose lives are messy. And two angles I want to look at it through this evening. The first is the depths that Samson arrives at, the real low points. And it is really grim. And then we'll see the hope that comes out of it, the other side. But we've got to go down first, the lows that Samson finds himself in. This is a really low point of Samson's life. I mean, he's always been in a mess. He's not always realized it, mind. But here, even he can see by the end. Things are not great. Samson's life altogether is a real mess. He doesn't stick to the Nazarite vow that he had made, that he was meant to keep, and breaks it all the way through his life. He makes all sorts of mistakes, doesn't he? He's always in some sort of trouble or another. He's a man of violence and strife, not a man of peace. Always trouble following him round. A man who's often found hanging around in vineyards, even though he's not meant to go anywhere near the fruit of the vine. And the implication is he's been drinking there, and his life's in a bit of disorder as a result. A man who's often found mixing with lots of different women, and that causes him a lot of grief. His life's a mess. And his life's a mess in all those circumstances because there seems to be a mess within Samson. And he's not dealing with it. The outward marks of faithfulness start to fall away, but the inward faithfulness isn't there at all. And the outward chaos he ends up in really is a result of the mess inside his own heart, isn't it? And what we're seeing here at the end of Samson's story is the results of the mess that is inside his heart. This is the ruin that he has brought himself into. It's often the case, isn't it? We don't see the mess on the surface, but it always comes out in the end. All the mess inside our hearts, we might cover it up really well, all comes out in the end. And here, at the end of Samson's life, it all comes out. All the things he hadn't put right, the little things, all come out. All the mess that he's allowed himself to get into, all comes out here in the end. So here it is in Samson, the inner mess coming out for everyone to see. There it is in Samson. Where is it in you? What's the mess that's under the surface with you? You know it's there. You know it's there. There's a reason you try and keep it under the surface, because you know it's there, and you know it's not great. What is it? Well, this story tells us that it all comes out in the end. All becomes clear. The mess shows itself up, and it happens here in the life of Samson. It happens here in three really poignant ways, okay, in the life of Samson. The first is all to do with his hair. Remember, there were those three marks of someone who was a Nazarite, someone who'd taken that vow. Don't drink, and yet he's always in the vineyards. Don't touch anything dead, and yet he's always making stuff dead whenever he touches it. And he's constantly surrounded by death. Most of the things he puts his hands on end up dead. And then there's this final condition. Don't cut your hair if you're a Nazarite, if you're taking this vow of faithfulness. Let it grow out so that everyone can see that you are different, that you are set apart. And really, you could say in the life of Samson, of the three marks of a Nazarite, his hair was the only thing that consistently marked him out. He messed up on the other stuff all the time, but his hair at least would always mark him out. He looked like a Nazarite. He looked the part. He fails in every point. And here in this part of the story, we see something very, very sad happening, don't we? Samson's hair is shaved off. Even that outward sign, the easiest one for him to keep, even that outward sign is gone. And you look at him, and he doesn't even look the part anymore. You couldn't recognize him as this faithful deliverer that he was made to be. It signifies, really, that something really awful is happening in his heart. And it's a really sad scene, isn't it, that leads up to it. Delilah has taken him in. She's conned him. And she tries to get him to tell her the secret of his strength. Now, she's not very subtle about it, is she? Do you notice that? not very subtle at all. Verse 6. Verse 6, Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies and how you might be bound that someone could subdue you. Anyone ask you that kind of question, don't answer him. Yeah? Not subtle at all. And over again, she keeps asking the same sort of question. And Samson keeps giving in a little bit, doesn't he? He tells her something just to get her off his back a bit. And you think he'd have learned his lesson, wouldn't you, after the first few times? So he says to her, well, actually, if you do this, and it's a red herring, it doesn't really work. If you tie me with this sort of stuff, then I'll be bound. And he wakes up and that very stuff is tied around him. He breaks it off and there's soldiers everywhere. I think he'd have learned his lesson, but he doesn't. And again, he keeps doing the same thing. He keeps giving in when she tries to get these answers out of him. But he doesn't seem to learn, does he? And he actually gets really close to the mark, doesn't he, with that third attempt, that last but one attempt. He says, it's something to do with my hair. So weave it together and then I'll lose my... He's almost let it slip and then he's sort of curved around at the last moment, doesn't he? It's my hair, shit, no, don't shave it off. Weave it together. Almost given in. Really close to the mark. It's a really sad scene. It becomes particularly sad at the end, doesn't it? Verses 16 and 17. And she pressed him hard with her words day after day and urged him, and his soul was vexed to death. She's nagged him so much, he'd rather die than put up with this anymore. And he told her all his heart. He said to her, a razor has never come upon my head. I've been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. That's a stretch, but if my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me and I shall become weak and be like any other man. Gives in completely. She's really nagged him. And the writer tells him she's pressed him so hard that he's vexed to death. Here's a man who's worn out and has given up. He's been called to deliver the people, but he can't put up with it anymore. And it's something as small as this that has sent him off the rails. He's so drained by Delilah nagging him that there in verse 17, he told her all his heart. Nothing was concealed. He revealed all his weakness. He told her exactly how she could get to him. He gave up. Shave my head. My strength will leave me. It's a tragic scene, isn't it? This man who could have been something so great. And he ends up somewhere like this. It's even sadder then when it happens, isn't it? Verse 19, she made him sleep on her knees and she called a man to shave off the seven locks of his head. Then she began to torment him. And his strength left him. That's when she shows her true colours. And there he is. Lost all his strength, being mocked by this woman who has totally conned him. She made him sleep on her knees, called in someone else to come and shave off his hair, and then she torments him. What a sad state this mighty warrior finds himself in, this great man of God, Samson, set apart from all the people. This is where he ends up. Given up on so many parts of his vow, hadn't he, throughout his life. But he always had his hair, at least. And now he hasn't even got that. His hair is shaved off. He no longer is that obviously identifiable man of God that you could see in the street and know he's the one who's going to bring us through this. Everyone can see very clearly now, everyone who knows him, that this defining feature of Samson is gone. He bears no resemblance anymore to the mighty man of God that he was called to be. It's a real low point in the life of Samson. Have you ever gone that low? Have you ever made that kind of mistake? Where everyone can see it on your face. Everyone who knows you knows who you really are now. Shown up for what you're really like. It gets worse. It's not just the outward signs. Something terrible's happening on the inside here. And we read that when his hair is shaved and he wakes up we're told that the Lord left him. The Lord left him. The Spirit leaves him. The Spirit who had so empowered him to do these great things, who had rushed upon him in these great moments to perform these great acts, he now withdraws. He leaves Samson. And worse even than that, not only had the Spirit withdrawn, but verse 20 tells us, Samson didn't even know that the Spirit had withdrawn. He didn't even realize that God's hand of blessing had been held back from him. No, he didn't even realize. It's a sad state to find yourself in, isn't it? It's tragic to live a life among the people of God, pretending to serve God, even perhaps leading the people of God, and yet with no attention on God. So much so that when God leaves the picture, you wouldn't even notice that he's gone. Tragic. I wonder if that's your Christianity. Is it a Christless Christianity? Is it a godless godliness that you're pursuing? If he was out of the picture, would you even notice? Would you even notice? That's where Samson finds himself. Terrible, isn't it? Tragic. Tragic. The Lord who had so blessed him, so empowered him, he now withdraws and Samson doesn't even know about it. He's so caught up in himself that he doesn't even know when God is taken out of the picture. And Samson's so different to Jesus, isn't he? Jesus, the real deliverer, the one who, he's like Samson in all the ways that Samson is good, but he's far better than Samson in every way altogether. How different Samson is here to Jesus. Jesus who closely walked in fellowship with the Father and the Spirit. Jesus who is always mindful of God in everything that he ever does. Jesus who is so acutely aware of that feeling of forsakenness on the cross. Even though he's in constant union with the Father and the Spirit, even though there's no break in fellowship there, he is so aware, so real is that awareness of forsakenness that he experiences on the cross. It is so troubling to the Lord Jesus that there's no way that he could ever say that he didn't notice what was going on. He cries out in agony, "Why have you forsaken me?" How different that is. And yet Samson here he is. He's in a real bad way, isn't he? The Spirit has withdrawn. And that's shown up for us. Here it's shown up in another moment as well. It comes a little later on. Verse 21 his hair has been cut, the Spirit is withdrawn, and still Samson goes to fight these people off, doesn't he? It says there, like he always has before, but he can't do it this time. And it dawns on him, it was God who'd empowered him all this time. It wasn't him doing his own thing. So the Spirit leaves him. The third obvious sign that things are going downhill are to do with his eyes. His hair is shaved. The Spirit leaves him. Then they take hold of him, don't they? And they gouge out his eyes. It's a really graphic, horrible image. They pull his eyes out. You don't put that in the children's story version, do you? That's what happens here when Samson gets in a mess. They pluck out his eyes. That sort of treatment, that barbarity was quite common in these sort of empires, these sort of societies, a way to treat your enemies. Here he is, his eyes are pulled from his head. And that's a terrible thought. You know you're in a bad way. You know you've done something wrong if your life leads you to that sort of place. That sort of trouble, where your eyes are being ripped out of your skull. That's what happens to him here. But there's a deeper significance to what's happening there. We're starting to look up now. It's not just that his eyes are being pulled out. That means something very significant for Samson, because Samson's eyes seem to drive absolutely everything that he does. He's a very impulsive man when you read about him. He's a man that sees things and he wants them and he goes after them. Women, vineyards, gates of the city, whatever he wants, he goes after it, picks it up and it's his. And off he goes. He looks, he likes what he sees, and he takes bit like our first parents, isn't he? In Eden. Looks, likes what he sees, takes it. Everything falls apart. And you can see a really poignant example of that, actually. Judges chapter 14, verse 3. Samson has seen one of the daughters of the Philistines. He wants her for his wife. And his father, Manoah, remember, he's a godly man. He's looking to the purposes of God. Manoah doesn't want this for his son. He wants better for him. And so his advice is, don't go after the Philistines. He says, can't you find an Israelite woman who will serve in faithfulness? Can't you do that? Samson's response is very telling. Samson tells his father, go and get her because she's right in my eyes. Samson sees what he wants and he goes after it. He is guided by what he sees. He's just like the nation, isn't he, that he's meant to be leading out of this darkness. Remember, there's that repeated refrain in the book of Judges. There's no king in Israel. The people do what's right in their own eyes. Samson says here, it's right in my eyes. And off he goes and does it. They see things. They go after them. They do whatever they please. And Samson's been raised up in that generation to turn them away from that. He's meant to be different. He's meant to bring them out of that kind of life. He's meant to fix the problem and fix their eyes upon the God who sits upon the throne. But Samson's just like the rest of them, guided by what he sees. And so he can't lead the people out of darkness, can he? He lives for what is seen, not for what is unseen. And finds himself in a bad way. He's so distracted by what is right in front of him, the things he can lay his eyes on and lay his hands on, that he's forgotten about the unseen glories that he was made for. I wonder, have you forgotten about that? You were made for more than this. You're made for more than the here and now and what you can see and touch. Do you know there's a whole world out there, an unseen world that you've been brought to participate in, Christian? Do you know that you were made, yes, to be part of this seen world with all of the wonderful things that happen here, but you were made to enjoy higher glories? You were made for an unseen world. Do you know even that there's an unseen world and that Jesus is enthroned there? That's where life is really found. Samson forgot about that. He was looking just to what was seen and he forgot about the unseen. But now his eyes have been gouged out and he can't see what is seen anymore. And it's a horrible thing to think of, isn't it? And yet, this is possibly the best moment of Samson's life so far. Because when his eyes are plucked out, he can no longer see what is seen and his attention is drawn again to what is unseen. He's restored. Things are starting to be put right in the life of Samson at this point. And this is the best moment he's ever known. Better than when he was achieving all those great victories and beating all those enemies and ripping apart those lions with his bare hands. Better than all of that. This is the real moment of glory starting to emerge in the life of Samson as he's humbled before the Lord. When his eyes are pulled out, now he really starts to see. It's like the Apostle Paul, isn't he, on the road to Damascus, obsessed with what he could see around him, visual religion, and yet so blind. And he's struck blind, and he starts to see what life is really all about. Johnny Cash wrote a song about it. He wrote a famous song, didn't he, called The Man in Black. He wrote another one called The Man in White. And it's about Paul's experience on the road to Damascus, and he said, I was blinded so that I might see the man in white. That's really what happened with Paul. That's what happened here with Samson. He's blinded. His eyes are ripped out. But now he really starts to see things. Can you see that? Now he's getting a taste of what real life is actually all about. And we all need something like that, don't we, to happen? We need to have our eyes turned away from just the things that are seen. We need our eyes opened up to see what is real in the unseen world. Samson needed that to happen. And God in his kindness gave it to him. He had his eyes plucked out so that he could see. And so there's hope for Samson. after this point. Start to look up a bit now. There are lows that Samson reaches to. But from there, he starts to look up, okay? His hair has been cut off. The spirit withdraws. His eyes are plucked out. So here he is now. Picture him. A blind, spiritually lethargic, bald man. There he is, chained up, entertaining people. His job was to lead the people of God in victory, and now his job is to entertain his enemies. They make fun of him. They have a laugh looking at him in the state that he's in. But there's hope here. Verse 22. The hair of his head began to grow again. Even his hair has been cut off. You can look at him now, and you can tell that something's not right. He's not the man who's going to lead God's people. But Samson's hair began to grow again. God was giving Samson a second chance. Can you see it? So there's hope. God's not done with Samson. Even after the mess he's got himself into. He's reached his lowest point. But God's not done with Samson. God's going to restore him. God is even going to use him. And a little foretaste of that is this. His hair begins to grow again. And he doesn't look like the great redeemer that he was made to be. But he's got this little bit of stubble on his head. And he looks like God might use him. And he does. There's hope for Samson. There's hope for us. There's hope for you tonight. Hope for you. What mess have you got yourself into? How low have you gone? What's the darkness that you find yourself in? There's hope for you. God's not done with you. God can restore you. God wants to see you put right again. He wants you to rise up again. He even wants to use you. That's the kind of God he is, this one true living God. Dagon is praised, isn't he, in this building, the God of the Philistines. And they rejoice in the awful horrors that are being perpetrated. What's the real God like? He's not like Dagon. Not like Dagon. He loves to raise up those who get into those horrible scrapes. He loves to set them apart and use them again. And that's the kind of God he is. And so when we read about Samson later on in the Bible, in the book of Hebrews, he's not remembered at all for his miserable failings. We read about him in Hebrews chapter 11. No mention of all this stuff. He's not remembered in the courts of history for his miserable failings. He's remembered as one who belongs to Jesus. He's remembered as a man of faith. He's remembered as someone who inherits the hope of glory. Why? Because the God he served is just like that. He loves to take hold of people like Samson and put them into his kingdom. What about you? Have you been humbled yet like Samson was humbled? Have you been emptied of yourself? Have you been emptied of your pride? Have you been brought to see Jesus in his glory? Have you really seen what life is all about? Is the vision of Jesus and his glory more real to you than anything else? Is that really what you consider worth pursuing? It's got to happen. It's got to happen. And so something quite astounding happens to Samson now at this point. He's in a really bad way. He's in a really low place. There he is in prison, bald head, eyes plucked out, and yet he cries out to God. This really lovely, humble, honest prayer. And such is the grace of God toward messed up people like Samson and messed up people like you and me, that at the weakest point that Samson finds himself at, he is given the honor, the privilege, the glory of pointing towards the real Redeemer. The one who's really going to come and be born of the promise and be raised up and deliver his people out of darkness. The one who'd be really raised up among us, who would live among us and live for us and be better than any of us. The one who was going to die for us and rise again so that he could take us with him into glory. Samson in his final moments gets the joy of pointing to him. Samson's last act is to cry out to this world, "Behold the Lamb who takes our sins away." That's what God does with messes like Samson. So picture the scene. This is where it all ends up for Samson. Here he is, arms outstretched in the place of his humiliation, bowing down with all his strength, bowing in his weakness, committing himself into the hands of God, pleading with him that glory would come out of this situation. And there in his death, he wins a great victory and to some extent delivers the people. So much so, the writer tells us here, he achieved more in his death than he ever did in his life. And Samson's a picture for us, isn't he, of Jesus Christ. Of course, Samson fails over and over again in being that picture. But Samson was never a better picture. Samson was never more Christ-like than in this moment. As he laid down his life for the deliverance of God's people, for the glory of God's name. Samson was never more Christ-like than he is in that moment. And neither are we. Neither are we. We are never more Christ-like than when we lay down our lives for the sake of our brothers and for the glory of God's name. When did you know what your job in this world is, Christian? Do you know what your job is? It's not just to preserve your dignity, although you are to live in a dignified way. It's not just to hold on to the truth, although we are to hold up the truth. Do you know why you've been left here? Do you know what your job is on earth, Christian? In the church, in the world? Your job is to die. To die every day. I wonder, have you learned how to die? Or is your life all about building up yourself? Have you learned how to die daily? To lay down yourself and your life? We are never more Christ-like than when we lay down our lives for the sake of the gospel, for the glory of God's name. Samson is never more Christ-like than in that moment. We are never more Christ-like than when we lay down our lives for the gospel. Christ is never more Christ-like than when he lays down his life for the sake of his people and the glory of his name. Do you realize that tonight? That the cross is not a side note in the being of God and in his purposes in the world. When you see your Savior with his arms stretched out like this, bowing down in weakness, that's exactly what he's like. There he is most fully expressing the glory that is found in the heart of God. There he's really showing off what God is like. Because the gospel tells us what God is like. And it tells us that fundamentally he is the kind of God who loves to lift up the lowly like this. Who loves to reach out to sinners in their mess and lift them up to glory. Who loves to send his Son to us and humble himself and lift us up to glory. Will God do it? Will he lift us up? He will. Because of Jesus. Because of Jesus. Two things to finish very briefly. The first thing to take home from this is this. The real God who's revealed to us in the scriptures, forget any other God, don't worry about that for now. The other gods can get lost. The real God loves to redeem. So your mess can be turned around tonight. Whatever mess you've got yourself into, it can be sorted out. Nothing's too hard. It can all be sorted out. It can all be put right. You can be restored. You can dwell in glory forever because the Lord loves to redeem his people. He loves to take hold of messy people and bring glory out of their lives. He can do it, okay? You're all right. Your situation can be turned around. Second thing is this. The one who is crucified is victorious. He's victorious forever. And his victory will never be overturned. And it will never be outshone by anything else. Samson, in the long run, he didn't really achieve much, did he? There's still chaos in the nation. Other judges need to be raised up. Other deliverers need to come. But Jesus, in his death, he's won an eternal victory, isn't he? He's really done something big. The crucified one is victorious forever and ever, and he is victorious for us. He's pure, he's blameless, but he enters into our mess with us, and he's raised up out of it for us. And we cry out from our mess, don't we? Lord, lift us up from here. Put it right, sort it out. Bring us out of this mess we've got ourselves into. And seeing Jesus, we know that God will lift us up out of this mess. So fix your eyes on Jesus tonight. Keep looking to him. Out of your darkness, when you feel that all hope is lost, cry out to him. Fix your eyes on him and run towards him. He'll lift you up. He'll bring you out of this. Look to him. Run to him.